Well, today we celebrate the gift of joy. We've been building to this week after week after week, the candles getting brighter, not so alone on the wreath. First, we started with hope, and then peace, and then love, each week building on the last. I find the progression of hope and peace and love and into today's joy to be so natural and intentional. They're placed in this order this year for a very important reason, because hope, you see, is the foundation. Hope is where we must start, because it is hope that will move us forward to experience the peace and the love and the joy. When we celebrate the gift of hope, we begin our journey to the manger in Bethlehem. And then we celebrate peace. You see, it's peace that carries us along and sustains us. Peace is what prevents us from withdrawing because of fear or uncertainty on the journey. When we celebrate peace, when we celebrate that gift of peace, we are traveling toward all that God is bringing into the world. And then we experience love. You see, it's love that brings us into relationship. Love is what engages us. So we're not just spectators to the gift of Christmas, but participants in it. You see, though we began a journey and we traveled along, when we celebrate the relationship of love, we take a seat as a part of the Holy Family. We're part of God's Holy Family through that love. These gifts that we celebrate are all preparing us to receive and celebrate the arrival of joy into the world. That's so powerful and so intentional that we get there. Because you see, joy can't be rushed into. Not if it's authentic. We went caroling last night. There was a nice group, about 10 of us, and oh man, the snow was gently falling, and we trotted through and would ring the doorbells and sing the songs, and it was this beautiful, beautiful evening, sharing the season with our neighbors. I tell you, I hadn't been caroling in like 15 years. Oh man, we got to do that again. It was fantastic. Norman Rockwell could not have painted a better night of caroling. It was that good. And while we were out caroling, we worked through this nice little book of songs that Ivan made sure to have available for us, in coordinating red and green colors. As we reached page 10, you know, we'd sort of get to a new house. Okay, page 2, page 4. We got to page 10, and at the top I read, "Joy to the World." And this was a very awkward moment for me, because I wasn't ready to sing "Joy to the World." It wasn't time. You see, there are many pastors, and I can't argue with their rationale, who respect the ancient tradition of not rushing musically into Christmas. Instead, we are supposed to honor Advent as a separate and important time. Our hymnal even has a different section full of songs you don't know that we're supposed to sing throughout all of December. And then we sing those ones we know, those beautiful Christmas carols, once Christmas gets here and for the days following. But I tell you, there are only so many weeks in a row I can sing "O Come, Emmanuel" before I lose it. See, I'm not one of those pastors that requires us to only sing Advent hymns until December 24th. I'll take as many opportunities as I can get to sing the wonderful songs of Christmas. And so we sing "Away in a Manger" and "Hark the Herald Angels Sing" and the other Christmas songs that are such a wonderful part of this season. And I tell you, the ritual and liturgy people haven't arrested me yet. And the Church Nerd Society has not revoked my membership. But even with my more casual attitude toward Christmas songs during Advent, I don't like rushing into "Joy to the World." For me, there is something amazing about the moment that the first notes of "Joy to the World" are sung on Christmas Eve. It'll happen on Tuesday night, right after we pass the light through the sanctuary and sing "Silent Night." Right after the Christ candle is carried out into the world as the words of John echo in the sanctuary. "The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it." And then there's this beautiful, pause. And then the music begins. And then we sing joy to the world. For me, the true joy of Christmas takes those more solemn moments to be as joyful as I believe it should be. But before we reach that joy, we have to come through the darkness. For until the light of that Christ candle is passed throughout this entire room, it's actually quite dark. In fact, it parallels that longest night of the year we just experienced. My Facebook wall had a beautiful, hope-filled comment from a friend yesterday that read, "No matter what, there will be more light tomorrow." Isn't that a beautiful idea? This is the message of Christmas. This is the hope and the peace and the love and what they've been building to, the promise that there will be more light tomorrow. Coming through that darkness is what helps us experience the joy that's brought into the world at Christmas. And that is why I invite us to celebrate joy this day as authentically as possible. I'm not going to lie. Part of me really wanted to come out here 2 days before Christmas Eve and just go all sorts of cheerleader on you. You know, get everybody pumped up, celebrating the gift of joy. I got the joy, 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 joy down it. All right, song, dance, everything. Pull out all the stops. Just get everybody jazzed. Part of me wants to take joy and crank it to 11. That feels good, at least on the surface. It's certainly easier at first. And it's typically well received if you don't ask too many questions. But I have come to find that rushing into joy can leave us sort of an empty joy, a superficial, short-lasting joy that, to be honest, way too many people in this world are simply performing for themselves and for everyone else. Empty joy doesn't grow out of who we are. Empty joy doesn't grow out of where we are. Well, we're offered by God. This gift of Christmas that we celebrate is an authentic joy that is deeply rooted in our lives, as imperfect, messy, and real as they are. Let's pause for a moment and consider that for any number of us, there are pains and hurts and losses and difficulties and sadness that make it hard to jump into joy, especially at this time of year. And though it may not sound very Christmassy to talk about, we can't experience all that Christmas offers if we don't talk about this stuff first. Now, some of you may not have any of these negative things going on in your life right now. Oh, enjoy those moments. But chances are, you will at some point. We all do. We all have those moments where joy just doesn't feel like what we want. We can't get there authentically. We might be able to pretend, but we have those hard times. And when we have those times, I want you to know that this is a place that you can be comfortable and welcomed exactly that way, even when you're not feeling the joy. You know, over the last few years, I have become very aware of people who quit going to church this time of year because it's too happy and joyful. And they just don't feel they fit. And maybe, just maybe, if we can acknowledge some of the harder stuff more often, including when we talk about joy, all people would know that their experiences are welcomed and valued here. Because those same experiences were welcomed and valued at that manger. In fact, it was that full breadth of human experience. That's why God chose to send us the gift of Christmas. In fact, that full breadth of human experience is what God sent that gift to experience Himself. Christians have traditionally used scriptures from Isaiah during Advent. We look back at the experiences and hopes of our religious heritage, and we try to find meaning that we can apply to the arrival of Jesus. I want you to hear the words of Isaiah, listening for hope and peace and love like we do in Advent. The desert and the dry land will be glad. The wilderness will rejoice and blossom like the crocus. They will burst into bloom and rejoice with joy and singing. They will receive the glory of Lebanon. They will receive the splendor of Carmel and Sharon. They will see the Lord's glory, the splendor of our God. Strengthen the weak hands and support the unsteady knees. Say to those who are panicking, be strong. Don't be afraid. For here is your God coming to bring things right. God will come to save you. Then the eyes of the blind will be opened. The ears of the deaf will be cleared. The lame will leap like the deer, and the tongue of the speechless will sing. Waters will spring up in the desert, and streams will appear in the wilderness. These words were originally written to an exiled and oppressed people, speaking to them of a blessed future to come. They name the difficult and joyless realities symbolized by this barren and lifeless land. And it's into those realities, the barrenness and lifelessness, the dryness and difficulty, into that reality, new life comes. This is why we use these scriptures at Christmas. Because the gift we celebrate is one that brings new life. And that gift of new life entered into our imperfect, messy world, just as we are. And that is what God is doing again this Christmas, just as God did at the first Christmas. God is meeting us exactly where we are and is bringing all of us life anew. God invites us to be transformed into all we might become while loving us just like we are. You see, I like this because God doesn't show up and say, let's get you out of here and pretend that whole barren wasteland thing never happened. Because it's hard for us to forget. Where I find joy is that God shows up and says, this is where you are. I can work with this. Let's find new life. God can bring forth new life even in the most barren of places. There is nowhere, there is no one, there is no circumstance in which God cannot bring forth abundant life. God sees our humanness and says, we can work with this. Let's see life begin again. God isn't just sending us some box with joy in it. That would be very empty. God is working in our lives to create new life that we can't help but be joyful about. That's what God is doing. God is bringing about something that will bring joy into our lives, not just telling us to feel that way. And when our lives are made anew and we have reason to be joyful, then it's authentic. Then it's rooted. Because if you listen closely to the scripture, you'll realize that the new life does come from within. It's not brought in from anywhere else. It's not just thrown at things. It's grown and developed. The waters spring up, having been there deep within, just inaccessible. Sometimes so deep we didn't even know they were there. But God calls them forth into life. And the crocus blooms. It's not delivered by some florist. It isn't window dressing that's just trying to hide an ugly interior. It was rooted and waiting to blossom and grow right where we are. Our joy comes from God's complete and full acceptance of our lives. Our joy comes from the grace-filled transformation that God is inviting us into. This is the promise. This is the gift. This is why we hope. This is where we can find peace. This is the product of love. God doesn't send new life into the green pasture beside the still waters. Those parts are doing just fine. God sends new life to us in our barren places on our darkest nights. You see, it's that new life that God sends that turns into the joy. The desert and the dry land will be glad. The wilderness will rejoice and blossom like the crocus. They will burst into bloom and rejoice with singing because of the great things that God is doing. And so we will be joyful and sing. For the gift of joy is a gift of life anew. New life that is being brought forth in the most unexpected of places. In us. Joy to the world. Amen.